This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we've got a great show for you today. This is going to be interesting. These are folks that are not old dogs, okay? But I think the thing that they have in common with us old dogs is that they have a pretty aggressive real estate investing goal going for themselves. And they have grown their real estate investments in a relatively short period of time. And I know that's of big interest to us old dogs. So I'm going to be introducing you to Kevin and Daniela Dillon. They are an Australian husband and wife team who have been investing in real estate since 2006. While Kevin worked as a property manager and Daniela was in IT, they began acquiring single-family homes, duplexes, and triplexes in Australia. They relocated to the U.S. in 2011 to extend their property portfolio. They have since acquired over 325 multifamily units, totaling over $20 million across Florida, Tennessee, Texas, and Wisconsin. Their latest acquisition was a 152-unit multifamily apartment community in Waco, Texas, which closed in May of 2017. And they're currently under contract for another 144-unit multifamily apartment community in Fort Worth, Texas. The Dillons are passionate about wealth creation through real estate, which has enabled them to quit their jobs while still in their 20s and focus on investing full-time for the past 7 to 8 years. They currently self-manage their three multifamily communities in Southeast Florida while still holding on to their Australian portfolio. They look forward to continually growing and expanding their property portfolio in the U.S. They have had experience in a variety of real estate strategies, including owner financing, developments, value-add projects, and syndication. Kevin and Daniela are currently based in Houston, Texas, with their 2-year-old and newborn sons. Now, are those twins?
No.
Yeah. So, Daniela just gave birth about 3 weeks ago.
Yes, oh, my goodness.
Thank you for the wonderful intro, Bill.
and thank you so much for having us on. Really appreciate it.
Oh, well, it is just a kick. I'm really excited about this because the things that you're doing, you know, the types of multis that you're buying and some of the creative financing, the syndication you're doing are all things that we talk about on our show a great deal, especially more recently. So I'm just excited to have you on and want to hear all about how you guys got into real estate investing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, again, Bill, thank you so much for having us on. And, you know, big I don't bark out to all those old dogs out there.
Yeah. Well, we'll welcome you young pups in here.
That's right. Yeah.
If you combine Kevin and my ages, we will qualify for.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't rub it in here. Okay.
Yeah. Look, I guess the journey started around about 13, 14 years ago. And I guess the story of real estate is essentially the story of Danielle and ourselves. Okay, so basically, it all kind of begun when Danielle and I we were going out for a few years, and I realized, and we were boyfriend and girlfriend at that stage, just dating, and I kind of realized she was the one. And so basically, in order to marry Daniela, I had to buy real estate. And that's how the entire...
You have to explain that a little bit better. Was that her requirement or her parents' requirement?
Okay, so what happened was I was in college at the University of Melbourne, and we were going out for about 2-3 years, and we'd been together for about 2 or 3 years. 1 year of that was long distance when she was working in the UK. And we were still going out after that time, and so I thought, that's a pretty good sign, if you can do the whole long distance thing and we're still together, she's probably the one. So yeah, so being a penniless student at that stage, I invited Daniela's parents out to a dingy little Asian takeaway place, somewhere in Melbourne, because that's all I could afford at the time. And I was, I was really excited, Bill. I sat down Daniela's parents and said, Mr. and Mrs. Coe, I've been seeing your daughter for 2 or 3 years now, and she's very special to me, and basically, I'd like to ask for a hand in marriage. And at that, Daniela's father kind of sits back in his chair and strokes his chin and says, no, not going to happen.
Well, that must really, really boost your ego there. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, yeah. Wow.
I mean, I was kind of completely, taken completely off guard, because if you know Daniela's father at all, he's a really nice guy, like a really, real gentleman. And so I was kind of just really kind of shocked. And I said, I blurted up, why? And basically, I kind of remember his exact phrasing, but to paraphrase my father-in-law, he was saying basically, you're kind of a bum, you haven't finished college, you have no job, and you have no house, like get those three things and maybe let's consider it.
My father's quite conservative. I come from a family of three girls, so he looks after his daughters.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And look, the really awkward thing, I remember, we hadn't even ordered food yet. Like, the menus hadn't even arrived. I just blurted all this out. And so, what do you talk about after that,
Actually, yeah. I'd probably say, well, we don't really have to eat here then. I mean, we can all go home now.
I think after that, it was just a very awkward kind of dinner. So I think we ended up talking about football or something. It took me a year. But a year later, I invited Danielle's parents out to dinner again. And, this time I waited to the very end of the meal, I paid the check and everything. So if they rejected me again, I was out of there,
Had a beeline for the door.
Okay. That's right. And so, at the very end of the meal, I said, Mr. and Mrs. Coe, a year ago, I invited you out for a dinner like this. And I asked for your daughter's hand in marriage. And I just want to let you know, a year later, I've finished college, finished my degree. I've gotten a job and I've gotten a house, and I was wondering if I could have your blessing to ask your daughter's hand in marriage. And that, Danielle's parents gave me their blessing. And so, yeah, it was awesome. It was really great. The issue was, though, Bill, the house was actually a 2-hour commute away from the job. So when Danielle and I got married, we decided that we'd rent out the house, and because it was just too far away to live and commute there. And I remember in that first year of me working full time, we made more money from the cash flow and the appreciation of that first investment than my entire year of working my guts out at this job. And so it was at that time that the economics and I guess the way real estate investment worked, it really made sense to me,
It was his light bulb moment.
yeah.
Just a single family home that you rented, right?
Yeah, look, this is just a single family home in Frankston, Victoria, for those of you that know Melbourne real estate, that we still own to this day. And it just continues to appreciate and cash flow for us. And Yeah, look, it was that first investment where the mechanics of real estate investment really made sense to me.
That's neat. That's really, what a great story. That's fascinating. Now, I understand in Melbourne, real estate is pretty expensive, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of comparable to Southern California.
That's right. Yeah. So at the moment in Melbourne, Australia, the median house price is $860,000. So the average, you know, just very average, humble, three bedroom, one bathroom property, you know, in a middle tier kind of suburb, yeah, it's $860,000. And in Sydney, Australia, it's even worse at $1.1 million. So, yeah, look, Australia certainly is a very expensive market to invest in. And consequently, it's very tough to find cash flow there.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, that's really crazy. So in this little town that where you bought this place, do you mind telling me what you paid for that little house that was 2 hours away?
$201,500.
Oh, so that was like a bargain, I would imagine, after living in Melbourne.
Well, yeah, look, and then this was 12 years ago. So I think the median house price at that stage was about 400,000 from memory, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I mean, we bought it and needed a lot of work, and you know, I remember we spent every weekend there with my parents renovating that property. You know,
it's like a family activity,
like a project, yeah, like a project, you know. And remember all of us, you know, like painting all the rooms and laying
down
floorboards and, you know, and then
installing a new kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so, like, I guess that was our weekend, like our life for about 2-3 months.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. How fun! And how many was it? Three bedroom?
Yeah, just a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom house.
Right.
Yeah, on 550 square feet of, square meters of land. Just a typical humble little house. Huh?
And what's the value of that home today? Or do you have an idea?
It's just under $500,000.
Oh man, so more than doubled in price. Mm. That's fantastic. Yeah. So okay, so you're working now. Is Daniela also working at the same time?
Correct. So in those first few years, we basically decided, yes, we want to do this real estate. So we were both working full time. As Kevin had mentioned, his parents had invited us to stay at their place rent free. So it enabled us to save a lot of money. And we pushed every spare dollar into real estate. So it was a forced savings for us.
Mm.
Didn't do any holiday trips or concerts. But basically just saved as much as we could so we could continue investing in real estate.
And what was your next purchase after the single family home?
So after that, we bought a duplex, actually.
That's smart. Yeah.
Yeah, in Cranbourne North in Melbourne, Australia. And same kind of story. You know, like we renovated one of the units. The other unit had a long-term resident in it. But I guess based on the renovation of the of that first unit, you know, like there was a bit of appreciation there. Plus, another thing we did was the two units were on a single title, and so we straight up subdivided that to unlock additional equity because the property was worth more on two separate titles than on a single title.
Now, did you finance both of these properties?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yeah, just regular, you know, bank finance.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so what? You're still living with your folks. Did you have sort of a game plan? Like how long were you thinking you're going to stay there before you sort of venture outward?
Yeah. So, one of the wisest men that I know, Pastor Ken Harris, he gave me some brilliant advice, during my teenage years. And he said, that he kind of lives his life according to 5-year plans or goals, and that that I should have my own kind of 5-year vision, you know, for our life, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I ended up being an 8-year vision, you know, in terms of a financial goal for our life. And so, yeah, look, I guess our plan was to, live with my parents. And then I guess every spare dollar we had push into investment real estate so that, you know, to prepare for the time when we were eventually, if God willing, if we had kids, that we could look after our children. But I guess more than that as well, the other big motivation for myself to get into real estate was, I don't know if you know, Bill, but I'm actually an only child. So I guess I certainly felt the burden to look after my parents in their old age. And I guess the vision I had was to, you know, have a, multiple streams of income to basically, you know, provide for my children, for Danielle, so she doesn't have to work, and I guess also for my parents, you know, so that I could, you know, I could look after them, because, you know, being an only child, I mean, I guess in the old age, I mean, the stewardship of them would come down to me anyway, and so on one income, it'd be tough to look after, you know,
everyone.
So
sure. Now, are your folks also in Australia?
Yes, they currently though my mum's is currently in our condo, and my parents spent a few months of the year here with us in the United States, and my father actually just flew back to Melbourne, Australia last night actually, but yeah, they spent about half they basically escaped the Australian winter and spend 6 months of the year here and 6 months back in Australia.
Wow, that's great. Now, did you have a plan? You mentioned you set up sort of a 5-year plan or vision. Were you looking at acquiring, you know, a house a year or property a year, save so much per year and apply that to real estate? What was the plan in terms of your real estate growth?
Yeah, so the plan was basically acquiring a property, and the way to, like, as leverage deals for the next one would be to force equity in a deal through either a subdivision or through just a general rehab,
value,
you know,
yeah,
that value kind of rehab to refi. And then, you know, recycling that equity as a down payment to the next deal. So that's what we did, I guess, for about 3 or 4 years. But we kind of realized 3 or 4 years into it that our rate of activity was relatively slow.
Slow.
You know, like, we weren't really hitting the financial goals that we had for ourselves. And so there was a bit of a pivot change in strategy in terms of we had to force major appreciation in a quicker way. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, we actually partnered with two other gentlemen, and we got into our first development actually. Mm-hmm. Back in Australia, in Chadston, Victoria. Mm-hmm.
Really? Okay, tell me about that.
Yeah, so basically it was an old house on a large piece of land, which we knocked down and put up 4 townhouses on.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's mm-hmm. How large was the piece of land that you purchased?
It was about 1,300 square meters.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
That's going into construction, and that's a whole new ballpark there.
Totally new ballpark.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And look, and that project, we did okay. You know, we made money from it. But dare I say, Bill, that's probably my first and last development project.
Yeah, I hear it can be very draining, and also, you know, just the finances. And you are with experienced developers, I would assume, right?
Yeah. I mean, one of our partners was a builder, mm-hmm. and the other partner was a financial planner. But yeah, look, I learned a lot about myself during that time in the sense that it didn't fit my risk profile. Mm-hmm. I guess as an investor, I realized what I like is cash flow. You know, like when you have cash flow, you there's a lot of money out, but then you get a little bit of money in, a little bit of money in, a little bit of money in. So as a strategy to hedge against risk, you know, cash flow is the ultimate way to hedge against risk. Whereas with development, it's a lot of money out, you know, money out, money out, money out, money out, money out, and then at the end of it, hopefully you get a lot of money back in. And I just realized, tell you the truth, Bill, I just didn't really have the balls for it.
right, sure. No, I understand.
Yeah, we were very fortunate with that particular development that the project wrapped up at just before the GFC happened. So had it been delayed for any reason, I think we would have been in a very difficult situation. So, mm-hmm. You know, this whole thing of timing the market, you're very much in less control, I think,
And the GFC being the global financial crisis is what us Aussies called the financial crisis that you guys had here in the US.
2008, yeah, right.
2008, 2009, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just, I'm kind of slow, so I ask a lot of questions here. But, okay, so you had the first 3 or 4 years, you said things were going kind of slow. What had you acquired in that time period?
So we had, two or three houses, mm-hmm. duplex and a triplex.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not bad in 2 or 3 years. That's actually pretty good.
Maybe we didn't have the triplex yet, but 2 or 3 houses and the dupe. Yeah, so something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and in each case you were leveraging equity, and it sounds like you know the there's just there was quite a growth period going on there in Australia, or at least in that area. Yeah. So you probably accumulated equity fairly quickly. So you leveraged that plus the money you were saving to acquire these properties. Now, how did you meet partners? How did you link up with people that wanted you to go in on a deal like that?
Well, to tell you the truth, at this stage, Bill, we weren't really partnering with anyone. Like, we were just using our own money and our own effort and our own blood, sweat, and tears, really, you know? We had service providers, but in terms of
investors
or anything like that, we didn't have anyone. It was basically just our own.
And what I would say is we almost stumbled into that process, because it wasn't until we relocated to the U.S. back in 2011 and started investing in multifamily. For the first time, we started learning about this other asset class that wasn't available to us in Australia. And we bought the communities by ourselves. And whenever we went back to Australia for Christmas, people would be asking, hey, how's it going in the U.S.? What are you guys doing? And when we were sharing about the work that we did, they actually came to us and said, wow, that sounds great. Let us know when you're doing the next deal. We'd be interested in joining in.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. Yeah. So with the development, I mean, did you guys make money? Was it, it was a good choice for you financially?
Yeah. Look, again, we made money from it, but I guess if we had time, like if we were 2 months late in terms of when we closed, we would have lost a ton of money as well. So in that way, we were, fairly lucky that. And so, like I said, that's why that development project was probably my first and last.
How do you decide to just all of a sudden fly to America? Let's just get on a plane tell me what went into that process.
Well, it's an interesting story that involves Mickey Mouse.
You really love it. Disneyland, and
Look, so in mid 2010, our family had a big family reunion in Orlando, Florida. So family from Malaysia, from the UK, from Australia, from America. We all converged onto Orlando, Florida, for 2 weeks of Mickey Mouse and roller coasters. And it was actually around about that time. While we were in Orlando, my father suggested, why don't you consider investing here in the U.S.? It was in 2010, the financial crisis was rolling through. And initially, my first reaction was definitely not. Again, it was completely outside my risk profile. It was a totally different country. Don't know anyone here. Don't know the system. Don't have any competitive advantage. And so, I kind of just dismissed it out of hand. But my father kind of, a few days later insisted, it could be a good move. Why don't you seriously consider it? And so I guess out of respect for my father, I told my father I'd seriously think and pray about it. And so, we seriously thought and prayed about it from June 2010 till December 2010. And five things happened to us that, kind of confirmed this could be the the will of the boss upstairs, so to speak, And I guess, how do you say no to that,
Right.
I mean, at the time we were young, we'd married, but we didn't have any kids. And, we had some investments behind us, some capital behind us as well. And we thought, okay, if we're going to be relocating to another country, this is the time to do it.
Yeah.
I think it would be a lot harder to, relocate an entire family. Kevin and I decided, let's do it. Let's check it out at least and see what we can do.
Yeah.
And
I guess we're in the U.S. One of the five things that kind of happened to us was I kind of prayed, coming to a new country, we have totally no competitive advantage whatsoever.
Yeah, we're one set of investors in a sea of millions.
Yeah,
so
how
we navigate this?
Exactly. You know? And so I prayed, in order to navigate it with skill and to do it well, we need some kind of competitive advantage. And so, lo and behold, I find out that I've got a long-lost uncle I haven't seen in 20 years that lives in Boca Raton, Florida. Mm-hmm. And I gave him a call, and he said, I work as a broker. I'm involved in real estate on a daily basis. I'm an investor myself. Come live with me and stay with me, and I'll show you the market. I'll show you the MLS. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
yeah. Really chin of B More Group.
And so, I guess that was one of the, one of the five answers to prayer that we had.
Oh, that's exciting. Wow. Now, are you living strictly on your real estate income now, or are you still doing jobs, at regular employment?
Yeah.
By the time we relocated to the US, it was our bread and butter. We were living purely from the cash flow of our investments.
Yeah. So we moved to the US. We bought two multifamily deals.
Correct.
And that's what got us out of the rat race.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell me about those. So those are your first two purchases, right?
Yeah. So these were about 7 years ago now that we've been doing this full time.
So initially we were looking for maybe a collection of single family houses to purchase.
Because that was our mindset at the time.
Yeah, right. That's what we knew from our experience back in Australia. And it wasn't until Willie, our uncle, had introduced us to a group of fourplexes in a row, actually. That was our first multifamily deal. So it was basically the street had 13 fourplexes and six of them on consecutively in one line was actually owned by one landlord who was putting it up on a short sale,
yeah.
Correct? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't on the market yet, right?
It wasn't. No, because it was a short sale.
Wow.
So did the numbers, and they were fantastic, of course. This is back in 2011.
What city is this in again?
Pompano Beach.
Pompano Beach, okay.
Yeah, gotcha.
Brown
County.
That's great. Great area.
Pretty much. I'm just off the I-95. Great location. So we decided, yes, let's do this. This makes a lot of management sense as well. Mm. Instead of, a maintenance guy going to, all these different locations, you have all the units in one street, in one place. And definitely you get the bulk savings as well when you purchase units. So that was our first acquisition. And the second one was more of the traditional multifamily setting where you had a common area, you've got like common facilities, like a laundry. And we purchased that from, I think it was an REO this time.
And how many units was that second purchase?
That was 27 units.
Okay. And that was one building?
No, several buildings. So it had some communal courtyards.
It's 27 units under a roof line of about five.
Okay, gotcha. And that's also in Florida too?
Correct.
That's also in Florida, yeah.
And are you guys living close distance to these properties?
Correct, yeah. We're based in Florida at the time.
Well, I mean, close meaning an hour away.
Okay. Well, that's pretty close. Yeah.
Closer than Australia.
Yeah. Well, that's what my next question really is. Okay, so you still got properties in Australia. Now, who's managing those while you guys are in the States?
So we do have professional property managers in Australia.
Okay.
Looking after our assets there. Both my parents, though, are currently retired. So I guess they keep a close eye on those assets there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the multifamily that we purchased in Southeast Florida, because we had the bulk, we elected to self-manage those.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so so now this is your seventh year as an investor, right? Where you buy those two,
that would have been our fifth year, I believe. Yeah. So
That's your fifth year. Okay.
Fifth year. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. And you buy those two, and that's a pretty major investment. I mean, did you just do that with funds that you'd already accumulated from your other investments?
So we refinanced all our assets in Australia. Plus we had the proceeds from the development and we used that money to buy these properties all cash.
Yes. Okay. At the time, the Australian dollar was actually stronger than the US dollar
And so we benefited from the price change.
This is historically, we don't see that very often. Yeah. And so now is the time to get in on US assets.
And you bought those pretty close to each other, it sounds like, too, right?
Within 6 months, would you say?
Yeah.
Wow. And that, what year was that? That was
2011.
Wow. Okay. And so now you've got these properties in Florida. You've got the properties in Australia. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to be generating some really decent cash flow at that point, I would imagine.
Well, yeah. Look, I mean, it was enough to for us to live on cheeseburgers the rest of our lives. So,
yeah, you moved up to cheeseburgers.
Like cheeseburgers.
Oh, that's great. And then you started moving into other states. So that obviously was a sort of a major move, I would imagine.
Yeah. So at that stage, I guess we kind of hit our financial goals in terms of, the vision that I had and the challenge that Pastor Ken gave me, in terms of having, a 5-year vision, for our life, which is great, And so I guess at that time, we went through a bit of a existential time of questioning in terms of, what was our purpose here on earth, and what should we be doing, and what's the best way that we can, be of service to our fellow man. And I guess we took our foot off the accelerator a little bit and just were a time of introspection, because I guess we'd bought ourselves that time. And also we were kind of thinking about family and a few different things. And I guess, like Danielle said before, it was around about that time when some people in Australia were questioning us about what we were doing here in the U.S. And I guess with that we were sharing what we were doing and the types of rates of return we were getting, and they wanted a piece of it. And so I guess in terms of the question of what to do next, some people wanted to invest with us, and so I guess there was capital for us to allocate. And so I guess that was the next step of our investing journey. And I guess that was being a syndicator, and being a steward of other people's funds.
Oh, wow. So you decided to take a pretty, pretty big move. I mean, what was your next purchase?
So the next purchase?
It was 51 units in Palm Beach County. So, this was a nicer property, I think. We invest typically in C-class stock. This was, pretty much two streets away from the Intracoastal, very nicely located. And it was the largest multifamily on the street. It's actually quite a major street as well, South Federal Highway. Very happy with that purchase. And it was, the first time we were partnering with others, which has a totally different dynamic when you've got other people to be accountable to. Not that we treat our investments any less, but, there is that expectation to steward the asset a lot more carefully and properly.
Because I guess if we lose our money, we lose our money. But if you lose other people's money, that's a lot worse.
We have to do right by them. Yeah. It's also our reputation at stake.
And that was a syndication, right? So how did you even know how to syndicate? I could see how you can kind of get to where you are just pretty much on your knowledge, from previous investments, but now you're going into syndication. That's a big step.
You're right, Bill. And to be honest, I think one major thing that we did was to actually have a mentor to help us through that process, and that's our mutual friend Peter Harris.
Yeah, great guy.
I think having a mentor leverages yourself as an investor, because you're able to bounce ideas and learn from someone who's been there and done that. And as they say, the best way to learn from mistakes is learning from somebody else's mistakes. it was really
not that Peter has done any mistakes, but
no.
I don't think Peter has done it ever.
It was amazing. Yeah.
But you're right in saying it was a completely different project for us, and where do you start? How do you know what you don't know?
Right.
That's when we engaged with Peter, and he was able to help us better steward the asset, add value to it. There's a temptation to overcapitalize these projects as well, but watching the market and knowing what the wisest decision is to make on a project like that.
Oh, yes. And so maybe fast forwarding to today, how many additional properties did you pick up, since then?
So since then, I'd say that project we did, and I guess that was our kind of proof of concept, And so in late last year, our investors from that project got back all their capital. We still own it, And so I guess, yeah, they're essentially getting an infinite return. And so I guess we knew that, yeah, like, look, this was the this is the model, and this is the way to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Since then, we've closed on another two projects. Closed on another two projects. Another one's about to close in the next week or two or so. At the moment, Bill, our partners and ourselves, we've got around about $36 million in real estate under contract at this very moment.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Now, yeah. you still have the 51 unit today, or did you sell it?
Yeah. We've been doing real estate now for a little under 12 years. And in that time, we've actually never sold anything except for that development project, which is, you know. Everything else has more or less been buy, hold, and refi.
Your investors are not looking necessarily for that exit strategy that's going to give them a big boost to cash, 3-5 years into the project.
Well, some of them are. Our latest project, we do have an exit strategy in place. Mm-hmm. So it very much depends on the not just the property, but also the group of investors that we're investing with, what everyone's goals are, what their expectations are. We have different projects tailored to different investors.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, this is amazing. It's I could probably talk to you for hours on this because it's an amazing story for a short period of time, relatively short period of time, how you have moved forward on this and how you saw that very early on how real estate investing could really be the focus for your careers as well as your future legacy and the things that you would create and grow and so forth. I just want to kind of look at the process so far. You've been doing this for 12 years, and what would you say your biggest mistake was in that process?
Great question, Bill. So I'd say, the hairiest time I think that we've had was that first project, the 51 units in Palm Beach County.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a time of transition.
For us, and I guess having that mindset of a syndicator and stewarding other people's capital, not just our own. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, our biggest mistake was not raising enough money, essentially, or having an ownership group. Let me put it another way: not spending enough capex on a project, not investing enough capital expenses to improve an asset.
Is it both of those? Not raising enough money and not allocating enough for capex?
Same thing. Yeah. So.
We raised only enough to close on the deal, but we hadn't budgeted for the capex because we were going to just reinvest the cash flow back into the project. But consequently, it just takes a lot longer to get your pro forma rents to
where you want
to
go,
turn around and the property.
Right. And consequently, as well, I mean, our investors, they didn't really get a dividend in the first year and a half of the deal, because all the spare cash flow went towards, improving the asset. And so what we should have done was to raise money over and beyond the down payment, essentially, for the capex budget, for working capital, so that we could invest, money into the property to improve it and to, and to get those returns that we
turn it around a lot quicker.
Yeah.
How did the investors respond to not getting their checks?
Well, the good thing about how we do business is we only invest with people we know personally, and all our investors are good friends of ours and family members as well. So I think they were a lot more gracious to us than
understanding. They were really great. But yeah, look. I guess we've kind of made it up in the sense that they've since gotten all their capital back, and they're now getting an infinite return. So I guess that's one of the things I really love about real estate as an asset class. It's just relatively forgiving, relatively forgiving asset class. Yeah. And the strategies are relatively simple. It was easy. It was a problem that was relatively easy to diagnose. Again, thanks to our mentor at the time, Peter, and he said, you have to invest money into this asset, and you have to, make the office a lot prettier, and you have to, redo some kitchens. And so I guess that was not bringing enough capital to the project to improve the property to implement the vision that we had for it.
Mm. Right, great.
Yeah, looking back on it, while we were in that process, I remember Kevin and I were thinking, oh my gosh, what have we gotten ourselves into? Like, this is a lot of work. This is huge. And I think a great piece of advice Peter Harris gave to us is he's saying that, you know, those who prosper are the ones that stay through the process. And he was just encouraging us, guys, you know, you're 80% of the way there. You just need to put in another 20% and, you know, just stick to the plan and don't just quit and sell up. And we're so glad we listened to his advice and stuck through it.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Well, conversely, what would you say your biggest success was so far?
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily point to any one thing in particular, but I'd say, Bill, dare I say longevity, mm-hmm. in the sense that, so when we started investing, back in Melbourne, Australia, back in the day, we did join a mentoring
group.
Okay, yes. So we joined Results Mentoring, run by Simon Buckingham and Brendan Kelly. Really great guys, right? And we made friends with people in the program and stayed in touch with people over the years. And I've just kind of been surprised by the number of people that don't stick with it. You know, I think of all the friends that we had, back then that we started doing property investment with. You know, I'd say quite a lot, actually, like definitely more than half, you know, more like three quarters or more don't invest today. And so, I guess in terms of success, I guess our biggest success is that we've just stuck with it, you know. Mm. And I guess if there's one thing that I've noticed in terms of a pattern is that eventually all of us end up doing a bad deal, you know, and often doing that bad deal, it kind of knocks us out, you know, like we lose confidence and it knocks us out of the game. And so I think the secret is that decide now that before we do our bad deal, that, you know, when I do my bad deal, I'm going to do another deal after that, you know, and just keep going, you know? And so, I think that's the, dare I say the secret, because that's just longevity, and I guess we've been doing this for 12 years, and I we want to keep doing this until the day we're not on this planet anymore, you know.
Right. Yeah. It works. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like too. I mean, it doesn't sound like you've had any bad deals yet. So I mean, I know that the development project was something that's probably a little bit more than you bit off, but overall, it looks like there weren't a lot of problems.
I think in that way we've certainly been. Being fortunate
we've been blessed. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of decisions that you need to make, and sometimes decisions are quite a critical point in the project. I think we've learned a lot, not only about real estate and the industry, but about ourselves as well.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
I think too. You realized early on, obviously back in Australia, the importance of mentoring and having other people that are more experienced as part of your growth process. And
yes.
I think that directly attributed to not to really having that many bad deals or any bad deals. Absolutely. At this point, which is great.
I think when the going gets tough, it's also really good to hang on to your why. Like, why are you doing this in the first place? Like, what are the big picture macro goals? Like,
yeah.
And that'll help you.
yeah, definitely. And I guess it's speaking to bad deals. I think the ultimate hedge against that is just having an asset that cash flows. Because I guess once you I've noticed a lot of people, how they lose money in real estate is that when you're forced to sell. But if you have an asset that's cash flowing, your holding period is potentially forever.
Infinite.
It's infinite, yeah. And so therefore you can wait out those cycles and when those bad periods come. So
Good point.
Yeah, so I think that's another kind of something that I've noticed in this journey so far.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, our audience is primarily people 50 plus and in age, and some of the folks are approaching retirement, some are already in retirement, but the thing they have in common is that they're concerned about the retirement years and and what they can do to either supplement to what they already have or create something that will be able to ensure that they have the kind of retirement that they've really dreamt about. You know, to be able to do the things they want to do, but also have a legacy that they can leave to their children and grandchildren and so forth. And so we don't have as long a time frame necessarily as you folks have. You guys have a long time ahead of you yet to do a lot of great things. But with our audience, what advice would you have for them? How should they get involved with real estate investing?
I think the insight, I guess, I can provide for your audience, Bill, something that I've noticed that our business has really taken off in the past 2 years or so, I'd say, you know, like really taken off. And I think what happened was our change in mindset in that prior to that, we were very much just, to use a sporting analogy, you know, we were playing singles tennis, you know, like it was a one man sport and we were the players, you know, it was just us. More recently, though, I guess what we've started doing is playing cricket, or to use a better analogy, like playing baseball, being involved in approaching our investing as a team sport, and that's just really kind of blown up our business in terms of doing things in a more communal sense rather than just doing it ourselves. So if you want to do things quicker and faster and bigger, approach investing as a team sport rather than doing it individually.
And what I would like to add to that is we definitely understand the situation people are in. We just look at our parents, for example. They're actually investors in our deals as well. But, you know, when we sat down and looked at their pensions, IRA funds, it's like, okay, so you're good for the next 10 years, but then what happens after that? It's like, certainly we want to see our parents maintain a certain lifestyle as well. And, you know, my dad's very active in ministry. He still does missions, even though he's retired. My mom helps out with the grandkids a lot. So they've invested with us as passive investors so that they don't have to worry about the day-to-day management of real estate, but they can still enjoy the cash flow of it. And the other example I could think of is our business partner, Brian Ho, actually, who just recently retired. And now he travels with his wife and holidays and enjoys himself.
We were talking to him yesterday from Morocco.
Yeah.
So he's living it up. He's enjoying it.
Wonderful. Just from the passive investments in real estate, huh?
Correct. Yeah. Wow. So just diversifying yourself and, you know, investing in several different deals. And enjoying that added multiple. It's back to that whole concept of having multiple streams of income.
Really neat. First time I've heard that. You know, I know that a lot of folks listening do have elderly parents and some that are in assisted living or other situations. But it's really interesting. As a younger couple here, you know, you're benefiting your family, your parents. And a lot of us are looking at, well, we're going to have to help our parents out. And I'm actually helping out my wife's parents right now. We're both real active and every day with them. But, you know, there's a way that you can, as a younger person, be able to actually directly benefit your folks by, you know, being in a potential place to invest which is really neat. That's exciting to hear that part of it, that your parents are benefiting now while they're still younger. Hopefully it'll be something for their future as well. So that's a really neat angle to that. It was really interesting. What's ahead for you? I mean, I know you're kind of working on these 5-year plans, but let's, you know, take a leap, maybe 10, you know, 20 years down the road. Where do you want to see this go?
Yeah, well, we certainly want to be involved in the business. You know, one thing I really love about this business is that it's really brought my family together. So, you know, like I, like Daniel and I, we share a desk and we work next to each other every day, you know. Yeah. And previously with my parents, we used to renovate the assets in Australia all together. So I just want to keep doing this as a way to keep the family together, you know. I'd love to pass away at my desk, you know. I can't have any better way to go, you know. So like I said, longevity is certainly one of our goals. But I guess more specifically, I guess from my perspective, you know, coming from Australia and Asia, you know, it's really tough to find cash flow in those areas, you know. In those markets, you know. And so I guess what I'd like to do is to build a bridge to provide Australian and Asian investors with cash flow for their investments and to expand the business to more so to Australia and Asia in a larger way. And I guess to provide America with more capital.
Yeah.
I still, you know, like we're blessed that we could more or less live anywhere on this planet. And look, at the moment we choose the United States because, I mean, it's
an awesome country.
It's an awesome, yeah, you know, yeah. Best country in the world, you know. And I guess U.S. real estate, you know, hand of my heart is the best investment on this planet.
Yeah.
So,
it's the most secure. And, I mean, the laws here that, govern real estate, we wouldn't be investing in, in the middle of, some desert in the Sahara or whatever, but, U.S. property is, yeah, very yeah. safe, very secure.
Because it's in, you know, the best, you know, country in the world and people, you know, with great values. And so I think in that way, the U.S. is a great long-term play. So I guess what we'd like to do is to provide Australian and Asian investors with cash flow and to bring capital to America.
That's great. Time has zipped by here, and
it's kind of frustrating because I seriously could stay on the phone for a couple hours with you here, and maybe I'll just follow up the call and do that anyway. But
if I didn't have back-to-back bookings today, but I really think that this is really fascinating. Your story is just very, very encouraging, I think, for a lot of folks. And I also think very informative. There's some wisdom there too that I think is invaluable. But we have now what we call our wrap it up session, where I ask you a series of quick questions, and you guys respond as quick as you can, and that to provide resources for our listeners as well. Well, so if you guys are ready, we're going to go ahead and move it into.
Absolutely.
Let's wrap it up. Okay. Favorite real estate book?
Okay. Mine would be Real Estate Riches by Dolph DeRoos.
And mine would be Equity Happens by Robert Helms and Russell Gray from the Real Estate Guys Radio.
Oh, I know those guys. Yeah. All right. How about favorite business book?
Probably the Book of Proverbs.
From the Bible.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's funny that in the Bible, Jesus actually talks more about finances than he does anything else. And just I think that that's an important point to bring.
Mm-hmm.
Good recommendation.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, business is life and life is business. So, the Book of Proverbs, I think, is certainly very informative for all that. Yeah.
Interesting. Is that also for you, Danielle?
I would say it's a book that I picked up in Hong Kong on our honeymoon, actually. It's called It's Not How Good You Are, But How Good You Want to Be. And it was written by Paul Arden, who is in advertising. So
he's passed away.
Yes, he's passed away.
Interesting. Wow. Well, how about your most valuable website for success?
Probably CoStar.
That's where you're spending all your time lately, huh?
Yeah.
Are you guys members or subscribed to CoStar?
Yes, we are.
Oh, great, good. How about favorite app?
I'm a bit of a Luddite, I guess, when it comes to technology. We don't really have that many apps on my phone. Look, probably the weather app.
Utilize that.
Yeah. I don't know.
I would say for me, I use Facebook a lot because I've only, you know, just recently discovered the power of social media and just sharing what you're doing to people. I mean, it's so secret what we do. And if we can somehow add value to someone else, we would love to do that. Yeah.
That's great. How about favorite quote?
This is the same for both of us.
Yeah. a really awesome quote that I can just spend days just meditating on, and look, and it's just got so many layers to it, you know. But it's relatively simple. But favorite quote would be "People are our wealth." So, you know, people are our wealth, and that was said by Rabbi Daniel Lavin.
Wow, people are our wealth.
Well, yeah, correct. People are our wealth.
Our wealth. Okay, awesome.
And it just works on so many different levels.
Yeah, because our lives are so much more enriched with people. You know, network is your net worth. All that stuff.
It just
encapsulates.
Yeah,
that.
Just really meditating. It just keeps going. Yeah. So yeah, people are our wealth.
It almost seems like your theme in your real estate investing too is that you really, that's where you really saw things happen, is when you when you brought other people in. And you know, that I mean, it's true, it's not a solo sport, like you said. Just not, you know, you're not out there playing solo, you know, you know, singles tennis. I mean, you, it is a relationship oriented business, and and it's what really, when you bring other people in, that you really realize the great assets of other individuals with other ideas and resources. That's awesome. That's good.
And if I could just quickly throw in again, I guess, Bill, for your audience, right? One of our partners is a gentleman named Bryant, and he is retired. And essentially, Bryant was the one that kind of brought the team together, and that's that's benefited us. It's benefited him, and is why I guess we're doing so much, so many more deals now. And so again, Bryant, being older, knew a lot more people than us. Yeah. And so he's just, rather than capital, rather than energy, I guess what he did was just connect people, And then that's just created wealth for everyone.
That's great. Final question. And this is kind of one of those, when you really got to think about it here. And that is, if everything you've built up, all of your buildings, your assets, your money, everything just boom, overnight it was gone. And all you were left with was $1,000. You'd probably say, I'd rather take the Australian currency. No, but if you only had $1,000, what would you do to relaunch your real estate investing business?
Mm-hmm. I'd spend that money on and just start taking people out for dinner. Yeah. Like basically just network, get to know as many people as possible, if you knew all 6.7 billion people on this planet, nothing would be beyond your reach. Mm-hmm. So just network, get to know as many people as possible.
Yeah.
That's great. You agree, Danielle?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's kind of one of the greatest things about this business as well, is just meeting such interesting people and, forming teams, as Kevin said, to reach our goals. Yeah.
That's neat. Well, guys, I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening too that want to find out more about you folks and how they can reach you and, maybe even get involved in some of your deals or what have you. And how could people get a hold of you?
Yeah, the best thing to do is just to go directly to our website, which is dhillonpartners.com. So Dhillon is our last name, spelled DHILLON, and then partners.
With an S.
No. Yeah, .com, and it will have all our contact details there.
No. Or otherwise, I mean, if any of you guys are around the Galleria in Houston, feel free to drop by.
you'll be there, huh? Okay.
Really?
That's great. Oh, wow. Well, it has been such a blast to have you guys on, and we're not completely done yet, though. So, we have a tradition on this show that all of our guests get to close out our show with their best old hound dog howl. Okay. Now you guys are Aussies. So what would it be? What's the dingo? You guys have like the dingoes out there?
No. Yeah.
Although, tell you the truth. So we actually, once we moved to the US, we actually flew our dog across with us.
Yeah. Oh, so did. Okay.
Yeah. So
we have a 15-year-old Siberian husky.
So. Oh my goodness.
Currently sleeping at my feet right now.
So he'll be our inspiration.
Yes, he will. So plenty of howling from him.
All right. Well, go ahead. Give us your best old hound dog howl here.
Well, I guess this would be a Siberian husky.
Right.
Oh, okay. Your best Siberian husky howl.
Okay. Yeah, this is how. Yeah.
And he goes, oh.
Oh, that's great. It sounds like he was falling asleep in the middle of his howl there. That's
he's fast asleep. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Well, thank you so much, Bill. It's been a real pleasure just visiting with you and your audience as well.
This is fun.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure, Bill. And look, you're quite a quality gentleman, and I really appreciate
Your time and this opportunity.
So thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for being on. Actually, I think the pleasure was all mine. I got so much out of this. This is really an invaluable interview, I think. Just a lot. Not only are you guys probably the nicest, most charming couple I think I've met, on this show, but I mean, you're very knowledgeable. You're sharp as a tack. I mean, you guys are real smart. You've done some good things, and I think there's a lot of great meat here that our listeners are going to just take home with them. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much.
Oh, you bet. And I just want to thank also all of our old dog listeners here for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate that. So please note, all of our listeners out there, that everything presented here will be summarized in our show notes. Now, our show notes are also going to have links in to their website, as well as some of the books and the resources that they've mentioned, as well as just summarizing everything that they've discussed here. So it should be a great resource for you. And that's at our website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And just look for the episode with the Dillons. That's the show for today. Remember, a cash flow is king, and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.